Hello, listeners. Yamina here. Welcome to the Dr. GPCR podcast. If you're watching or listening to the podcast on YouTube, you might be wondering, what am I doing in front of the camera? Well, the podcast, Dr. GPCR podcast, started 4 years ago, and I thought it was time for us to do something differently. Therefore, from now on, the introductions and outros of the podcast will be recorded with the camera on. Before we dive into this episode, I have a few announcements to make. First, I'd like to talk to you about the Dr. GPCR University that we launched in February of 2024. The goal is to provide courses and contents on all aspects of GPCR research to support you, our community. We kicked off the first course of the university by partnering with Dr. Terry Kanakian, who taught a class about applying pharmacology to drug discovery. The class was a great success. Mark your calendars for May 9th, as we are partnering with Dr. Sam Hoare, who will be building on the concepts taught by Dr. Kanakian and will be showing you how to analyze your data. The course is split up into four modules. The first module will be about analyzing concentration curve response data. The second one will be about analyzing agonist pharmacology data. The third one about antagonist pharmacology data. And the last one will be focusing on new dimensions of activity, including allosterism and kinetics. Learn how to handle allosteric modulator data, how to best analyze it and quantify activity in support of medicinal chemistry and target research. Please note that we are very excited to be offering 5 complimentary individual spots to anyone who'd like to join the course and lives in a developing country. This will be on a first come and first serve basis. And if you'd like to join Dr. Hoare's workshop on any of our next classes, we'll make a Google form available to you. I also want to take a moment to highlight that if you are in a developing country and you would like to access all the content in the ecosystem by getting a Dr. GPCR ecosystem premium plan, we do offer a 90% discount on this plan. If you'd like to take advantage of this offer, or if you are facing financial hardship and even with a 90% discount, you are unable to join us, we invite you to email us at hello@drgpcr.com. We are here to help. The second announcement I'd like to make is about the Endocrine and Metabolic GPCRs meeting. What are you doing April 22nd and 23rd? Join me and our GPCR colleagues for the inaugural edition of the Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs meeting taking place in the UK. This event will bring together scientists from both academia and industry to exchange data, technologies, and ideas in the field on GPC endocrine metabolic GPCRs. This meeting is organized by Bioscientifica and endorsed by the Society for Endocrinology. I'd like to say a special thank you to Professors Aileen Hanyalolu, Davide Calibero, Dr. Caroline Gorvin, Dr. Alejandra Tomas, and Professor Peter McCormick for putting together the scientific program of this very exciting meeting. The third announcement I'd like to make is for you to mark your calendar for this year's Dr. GPCR Symposia. This year, we're holding 3 events for which we have planned talks, poster presentations, and panel discussion. Anyone at any level working on GPCRs or related proteins is welcome to give a talk as we aim to democratize our events. If you have a story that you'd like to share in the form of a poster presentation, you're also welcome to join us. It doesn't have to be a full story. It doesn't have to be a full poster. Just bring in a couple of slides that you can use as a visual aid to discuss your project with your peers and colleagues. March 15th, this year was when we held the first Dr. GPCR symposium, and we talked about GPCR activation and signaling. It was a great success. We've had almost 100 people join us for the entire length of the conversations that we had and the talks that were presented. The next symposium, however, will be on June 7th and will be focusing on structural insights into GPCR activation. And then on October 11th, we'll dive deeply into GPCRs as therapeutic targets. If you'd like to join us, if you'd like to give a talk or present a poster at our event, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. If you want to join us to these events are free. You just have to become a Dr. GPCR ecosystem free site member, and you'll be able to get access to the link to join the talks. And now let's dive into this episode. Hello, everyone. This is Yamina from Dr. GPCR, and I'm very excited this afternoon to have with me Dr. Demet Araç. Demet, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for the invitation and hosting me here. It's a pleasure to be here.
I'm very glad that we're doing this, and we were saying this before we hit record. We were all both busy, and it's been a long time coming, but we're finally doing it.
Yes, we finally made it after like 4 years.
We did. The whole point is really getting to the finish line, and this is it. But before we talk about finishing, let's start at the beginning. Would you please introduce yourself and tell us who you are and what do you do?
I am Demet Araç. I'm at the University of Chicago. I'm an associate professor there, and I do study adhesion GPCRs. That's majorly what I do. Yes.
What got you into studying adhesion GPCRs, and also what got you into studying GPCRs at all?
So maybe I should start from the beginning, because you told me that you are interested in stories and like who is behind all this. Basically, I was born in Turkey a while ago, and then I did my undergraduate work in Turkey. I went to a department of molecular biology and genetics in Turkey. That was the only department at that time in Turkey that did anything related to biochemistry or anything that is not just biology. So I went there. That was the first, we were the first graduates from that department. And I studied a lot of genetics and such things. Then I came to United States for my PhD work. First, I was at the University of Chicago at Riverside for a year. Then I quickly changed to University of Texas Southwestern Medical Center at Dallas. And that's where I did not start working on GPCRs. I started working on, I chose the program Molecular Biophysics graduate program to go in and started doing NMR and studying neurotransmitter release. Basically, my whole project for 6-7 years was how a synaptic vesicle fuses with the plasma membrane and majorly the protein synaptotagmin, which is the calcium sensor at the synaptic junction, how it can sense calcium and fuse the membranes. I studied this from a biochemistry point of view quite a lot. I was in Jose Rizzo Reis lab, and I was collaborating with Tom Sudov, who was the neurobiologist. So after I graduated, I went to Stanford University. And before I went to Stanford University, I later learned that I was actually overlapping at UT Southwestern with Al Gilman, Roger Sunahara, Steve
Small
Scott,
world.
Joan Tesmer. They were there and I was there. Maybe we didn't quite overlap. Maybe I'm not exactly sure which years they were, but I was there too. I just never really got into GPCRs at that time. I did hear about GPCRs. I heard that, oh, they are really difficult to work with. And this is early 2000s. There was no GPCR structure at that time. The first one was in 2007. I heard that they're really difficult, and I even thought, oh, I'm never going to work on GPCRs.
Yeah.
Then I went to Stanford to Axel Brunger's lab. Following structural biology and neurobiology. This time I started working on proteins that are on the cell surface between the presynaptic cell and the postsynaptic cell, neuroligin, neuroxin to name them, that interact with each other. And they are important for synapse formation and maturation. In Axel Brunger's lab, I continued collaborating with Tom Sudov, who was the neurobiologist. And I studied them using, again, structural methods, but biochemistry and cell biology, other things. So that's when, after that project, neuroxin bound to other ligands, and those other ligands happened to be adhesion GPCRs.
Of course.
Of course. So that has so I started working on adhesion GPCRs, not because they were GPCRs, but because they bound to my proteins. And right around that time when I was designing constructs for structural studies, I realized that on latrophilin-1, which is the adhesion GPCR, there was this region that was everybody was saying it was unstructured, non-functional, there's nothing there. But my analysis, secondary structure analysis, there was no AlphaFold at that time. My secondary structure analysis told me that there are helices and beta strands there. And when I looked at all other adhesion GPCRs, there are 33 of them in human, we found the same pattern of helices and beta strands. So that was actually the how the gain domain was identified for adhesion GPCRs. And because you told me you like stories, I was pregnant at that time, like 8.5 months pregnant.
Of course, when else, right?
Yes, and I was anytime I could. So my brain was, they say pregnant brain don't work, but actually it was working against all the odds, against everything that was written in the literature that there is nothing there, it is not structured. There was the gain domain there. And afterwards we saw the structure and we realized it really does exist in all of the adhesion GPCRs. It is cleaved, the cleavage site, hallmark cleavage site is within the gain domain. And the last beta strand that is cleaved after the cleavage site is hidden inside the gain domain, in the core of the gain domain. So that's how I kind of started working on GPCRs. And after then, we really wanted to understand what is the domain that is concerned in all adhesion GPCRs do. So then I left everything else, focused directly on adhesion GPCRs and their mechanisms of action, trying to understand what they do. So long
And
answer to
you
your short
yeah no,
question.
I think this is great, and I have a bunch of follow-up questions. Mainly interested, did you always know you were going to be a scientist? Or considering that there was one department back in the day in Turkey where you could do this type of work and learning, yes,
Yes,
especially.
I actually always wanted, since I was like 13 years old, I think around that time I started showing an interest in documentaries on TV, which again weren't that different. There was the physics and like the how the Big Bang happened kind of things. I did like science and I never thought of becoming anything else. I have always wanted to be a scientist. Actually, that's why I went to a science high school and studied a lot of chemistry, physics, biology, math. I believe that has contributed quite a lot to like knowing quite a lot of, but I don't remember too much physics and chemistry anymore, but having studied them has prepared me to be able to do many different kinds of multidisciplinary research. So yes, I always want to be a
A
scientist.
scientist. I love it. I love it. And then from a cultural perspective, and also, from how was it to move from Turkey to the US? I mean, Chicago is one thing, but then Texas, and then coming back to Chicago. I'm asking this because I've moved around quite a lot. So I lived in Romania, I lived in Algeria, I lived in Canada. And in the US, and even in the US, I've moved quite a lot. And every place I went to was different. So it required skills to adapt and time.
Yes, it was difficult, but not that difficult. I know people who have a lot of difficulty. I was a boarding student starting from high school. That high school that I mentioned was a boarding school. So start when I was 15, I did separate from my parents and family, although it was in the same city, but still, I kind of liked being on my own. And then in college, I was again away from my family.
Mm-hmm.
So family or the country, leaving your country behind wasn't really an issue for me. But of course, United States is very different than like Europe and the rest of the world. You need a car. So when I arrived at Riverside, California, Riverside, that's where I first arrived. It was really interesting that there was nobody on the streets walking. There was no pedestrian way. It was just a difficult, like every other
Yeah.
international student, I guess. It's a different place. That was the hardest thing, I guess, to get
Yeah.
used to your how to live here.
Yeah. No, absolutely. You make a great point. I think it's very different. And I mean, coming from Canada, it's not that different, but I can tell that even coming from Canada to the US, there are major differences, even although we're in North America. We stayed in North America in that sense. But I think what doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And it might be painful, but and it is always growing is always painful. But I feel like it's one superpower that PhD scientists or soon to be PhD scientists and postdocs have is this ability to adapt.
Yes, definitely. I believe that whatever doesn't kill you makes you stronger. And you are also strong. Everybody is strong enough, just that they should just go and do it, whatever it
Yeah,
is.
but it's hard. That's the hard part is like just do it. Like the doing it part is very difficult. That's why I wanted to get your input on how it was switching from, coming from Turkey to the US and then even in the US moving around. The other question I had for you is, did you always know that you wanted to be a professor, or this was kind of the natural destination when you do a PhD and a postdoc for you?
I guess when I started at 13, I didn't think that far ahead. I just wanted to do science. I mean, I enjoy science. I do science for the science part of it. I don't do it for becoming a professor or publishing
Yeah.
or nothing.
Yeah.
I just enjoy doing science. I think it is a like the meaning of life for me.
Yeah. I think it's a privilege when you're lucky to be in a situation where you get to do science and for the knowledge, to expand the knowledge, which I think is really, really great.
Yes. I don't think I would enjoy anything else, other than doing science.
What about when you were, finishing up your PhD and thinking about a postdoc? What was going on then? How did you decide to do a postdoc? I guess I have to give you a little bit of context. So I finished my undergrad in early 2000s. And then I loved working in the lab, really. And for me, it was chemokine receptors, which again, we could talk about that for a long time. But basically, I did a master's, and during my after my ma or during the master's, my PI said, "You mean I really would love to offer you a PhD position? We can apply for these funding opportunities, and if you stay and you get them, I will also allow you to teach." So I taught parts of his class, actually two different classes, and for me, teaching was important. I really, really enjoyed it. But in my mind, when I finished my PhD, one, I didn't look around. Two, in my mind, it was my environment told me you have to do a postdoc. And then once you do your postdoc, you have to be a professor. So I was just wondering about your experience and how did you navigate these steps in your career?
So probably you are right. The transition from PhD to postdoc was around 2005, 2006 for me. And at that time, there wasn't too much other things. But even if there had been, I would just straight go into postdoc. And then after postdoc, I would definitely go for academic positions because that's what I do like. Just I don't know if you know I am married to my husband who is who is also a scientist who's also we know each other from that high school, science high school, and then
Wow.
I mean we were not together at that time, but we happened to go to the same college, that's the same department, and then we basically we do share similar passions. He's also a scientist, so at that time he was also at UT Southwestern finishing with me. So we were both trying to go to similar very good postdocs in the same city. That's what was going on at the end of my PhD. We never really thought of not doing a postdoc. And so yeah, I do enjoy science, I guess. I know other people have like most scientists go through different paths.
Yeah.
I didn't.
I mean, it's okay. I mean, everybody has their own path, and we all, I did two postdocs, so to only to realize that I didn't want to be a professor. So, you know, and it's okay. And I still get to use the skills that I developed during the two postdocs and the PhD and the master's in my everyday and what I'm doing with Dr. GPCR in my job as well. But I was just curious, and now that you mentioned that you did have the two body problem, where you were two people in science who had to move together.
Yes.
And I hear that that can be a not problem, but that can be a challenge, especially when you're looking for academic positions. I think postdocs is one thing, but when you're looking for faculty positions, that is can be a challenge. I was just talking to John Genesco, whose podcast episode comes out today, so people can go back and figure out what they were recording. And he was mentioning the same thing, that it took extra preparation and extra effort to make sure that you get both people get a job in the same city.
That's right. Yes, at the postdoc level, we applied to, I mean, I can share my experience, I guess, if you want.
Please, yes.
At the end of postdoc, sorry, at the end of PhD, we both chose the labs that we wanted to go. We tried to focus on big cities that have multiple opportunities, so that like we don't have to be to one place. There are increasing the chances, so it is like New York, San Francisco, such places, Boston. So it was a more or less okay timing and everything. It was hard. And then at the faculty level, we had a similar situation. Currently, he's also at U University of Chicago, his faculty in the same department. So we got lucky, I guess. It did help that we both had good publications, I guess. I'm not sure. It is difficult. It is difficult, but it is impossible.
Exactly. I think mission difficult is fine. Mission impossible, that's a whole other
It's not Mission
question.
Impossible.
I love it. I love it. So, you mentioned in the beginning how you ended up working on Adhesion GPCRs. And I guess once you were finishing up your postdoc and you were applying for faculty positions, you set up your lab around Adhesion GPCRs. But what I was trying to think to ask is, what were how did your from a scientific perspective first, how did your research evolve from the moment you started your lab to today? From a question perspective.
So maybe I should tell this should start from the end of my postdoc. Basically, gain domain, the adhesion GPCR, the concert gain domain came out as a interesting domain. But maybe I should go a little bit earlier, sorry, in the adhesion GPCR field. To answer this question. So adhesion GPCRs are very large molecules, and probably that's why they have not been studied for a long time. They're we lag the other GPCRs were more commonly studied. Adhesion GPCRs were always ignored. Although in the like 80s, 90s, CD97 and latrophilins were studied, but then they didn't, people didn't really exactly continue from an adhesion GPCR point of view. So they were not studied, and whether they were really G protein coupled was not known for a very long time. Their ligands were not known. Their downstream signaling pathways were not known. No functional assays existed for them. So this was the situation when I studied about for the gain domain. Basically, I studied the gain domain from it was published in 2012, but I've started working on it in 2007. So I did work on it 5 years. The problem with that is that because there was nothing to study adhesion GPCRs, we found this domain. Then how do we prove that it is even important? So at the end of my postdoc, I actually even had applied for a K99 or K01, which was not even sent to any institute. No institute wanted it because it was not proven to be important for anything. Adhesion GPCRs wasn't known, wasn't really proven to be important. So that's how things were at the end of my postdoc when I started my faculty position. And when I was applying for my faculty positions, coming up with a research proposal, I did think very hard about what to propose after getting a K99 application returned back to me without even being reviewed because it wasn't interesting to any institution. I really questioned whether I should work on adhesion GPCRs or completely give up working on them because I wouldn't get funding. Well, I didn't do that. But the point is, it was really difficult to study them. So when I started, so you ask how my research has evolved. I wanted to study adhesion GPCRs and understand their mechanisms, understand everything about them. And my research skills, I'm a structural biologist by training, a little bit of molecular biology, genetics, cell biology, throw in there, all these things. And I did some neurobiology. Kind of cell biology kind of work in Tom Sudov's lab during my postdoc. So I had to kind of combine everything and in the kitchen sink and come up with things to work on adhesion GPCRs and figure out what to do with them. So the first thing that I really wanted to do in my lab when I started my lab is to get a functional assay. To get to so that we can work on it, we can mutate the protein, add things on it, and observe the downstream like consequences of that. That's why we have, and I tried a little bit of different things. I tried collaborating with people who some of the people have helped me quite a lot, actually. I remember Sylvia Goodking. Michelle Beauvoir giving me advice, Sylvia Goodkin trying a little bit. Things didn't work. So I started doing signaling assays in the lab, although it was not my expertise. So I did a little postdoc in my own lab, learning a lot about downstream signaling, G protein signaling assays. Another thing is we're already doing structural biology. NMR crystallography, but then cryo-EM came out, and now we are doing cryo-EM, so that developed in our lab. We also collaborated with protein engineering people, antibody engineering, so that we can have tools, some kind of something to, because there are no agonist, antagonist small molecules, there were not. So we also wanted to do that. We at the same time did some downstream signaling high-throughput screens to find small molecules for adhesion GPCRs. Other things we did is looking for ligands, solving structures together with their ligands, trying to understand the effect of ligands on downstream signaling. Another thing we have done is to collaborate with biologists who can really look at phenotypes. For example, I have collaborators, Tom Sudov, who is my mouse collaborator for synapse formation assays, We had a very successful collaboration with Kelly Monk, who does zebrafish, who studied Asian GPCRs in zebrafish. I'm definitely forgetting other people. Currently, we are collaborating with Pascal Kratzios for C. elegans and other collaborations. Basically, our lab developed in directions so that we do everything that is out there to be able to understand how adhesion GPCRs work. So
no, I love it. No, I really love it. And thank you for that, because I think it gives a really holistic view as to your motivation from the moment you realize that these proteins are interesting and we don't know anything. And when I started Dr. GPCR, I had Anthony Picard come on the podcast.
Yes, Anthony Picard. Anthony is my collaborator.
I love Anthony. He's wonderful. Yeah. I had Ines Liebscher. I had Simone Premel as well. And I started to learn a little bit more about adhesion GPCRs. And this was, you know, a couple of years ago when I started Dr. GPCR. And that's when I realized that, oh my God, we don't have enough tools. So I can only think about the lack of tools that was happening when you started working on the receptors.
Yes, there was nothing really, not much. Now there is much more.
Yes, I agree. The other question I had, so you mentioned that your first NIH, I think it was a K99, they returned it because they didn't know what to do with it. Eventually, we've discovered and started to understand the role, the pathophysiological role of adhesion GPCRs. I'm just wondering, when in time since that K99 was returned to you, did things change? Did anyone when because you had to, I mean, you were at the forefront of this and realized we don't have the tools, we don't understand, we don't have the ligands, we don't know, we need to express these things. And you know, as you mentioned, they're big, so they can be anywhere between 600 to 6,000 amino acids. I mean, what do you do? From a nature perspective, like, what do you do with 6,000 amino acids in one protein? But I was wondering, in time, is there a time where the field of adhesion GPCRs developed enough so that the funding agencies were able to say, oh yeah, now we can direct your proposal to one specific or multiple funding agencies?
Well, that K99, maybe I did not write it well. Maybe it's not the adhesion GPCR. But to answer to your question, I think in 2000, until 2000s or so, there were some studies about adhesion GPCRs. In 2000s, Kelly Monk and Champiao published, and other people published important genetics papers about adhesion GPCRs just as a consequence. They came out from genetic screens, which and they found that they are important for brain development, myelination. So those were very like noticeable. And right around 2012, our gain domain structure came out. Together with those, we couldn't prove it was important, but other people did prove it's important. We just showed that there's a domain there and this cleavage peptide is hidden inside there. So I think that the field kind of at that time, after that point, started getting accelerated. This tethered agonist mechanism came out by other people. I think the idea that tethered agonist is inside the gain domain has brought the idea that what would happen if it is not inside, if it is outside. So then this addition of the peptide came and the tethered agonist mechanism of adhesion GPCRs came out. It was in 2014, two papers came out. And during the meantime, we have, my lab has focused on the extracellular regions of adhesion GPCRs. And what do we do with those 6,000 amino acids? We didn't work with the 6,000 one, but we have recently worked with a 3,000 one, the second largest cell source. It's on bioarchive. We will express it. So you do a lot of constructs, you do a lot of cloning. Yeah. And so anyway, there are ways to work around it. And this is what we are doing. And you do the same thing as you do to the other ones. It's more difficult, but it is again not mission impossible.
Yeah.
We do it. So basically, how did it continue? I think the field is getting faster and faster now. I see that so many more in 2000, I believe 2011 or so. I went to Brian Kobilka and Tongsin Kobilka's GPCR workshops. I'm not
Yeah.
sure if it was at the day, a year or earlier. But at that time, the GPCR field, when I said adhesion GPCRs, nobody really knew
Reacted to
about
it.
that. What
Yeah.
so that's how it was. But since then, now everybody knows about it. Now there are the tetrad agonist mediated, the transmembrane region structures, many of them is available. But I don't think that this is the end of the story. There is a lot, so much more that will be coming out in the recent next years, in the following years.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. And then we have to mention it. So Anthony is co-organizing the next adhesion GPCR consortium meeting in October, I think, in Mexico.
That's
So I
right.
think if anyone is interested in listening to this recording whenever we get to publish it and wants to learn more about adhesion GPCRs, that's the place to be, because the consortium is holding a retreat there.
That's right. In October, I think 23, 24, 25, if I'm
I
not
think
wrong.
so. Yeah, that's what I have in mind.
Yes, adhesion GPCR meeting will be there, and I should advertise for Anthony. I will be there. It will be a great meeting.
I think so too. I think it's going to be a lovely meeting, for sure. The other question, the other thought I had while you were going through, the different stages of the field is, which made me wonder. One is, I wonder if sometimes in science, when a protein is discovered, somebody gives it a name, right? And then we find more proteins that look like that, and then, oh, we say it might be a family. So then we change the names. And then at some point, these papers with the old name or old nomenclature just get buried. And anyone who has never heard about the first nomenclature is not going to go and look in PubMed. And look, type that up.
It is the adhesion GPCR field. It's kind of like that. The old names, I actually know the old names. It was, I think, changed to ADGR nomenclature. There's an adhesion GPCR consortium, and I'm also in it, that have done the change. And it happened, I think, around 2013, 14, probably, but I could never get used to the new names. So I
Yeah.
still call them, our publications are a mixture.
Of both. Yeah,
I hope
yeah.
our papers doesn't get like lost in the literature.
Yeah. I actually was on the IUFAR website a couple of months ago, and I was looking for something, and I figured, well, you have this whole list of adhesion GPCRs, and I think the AD is kept, but then the last letters change, and there were too many letters at some point. I was like, okay, wait a minute, this is way too confusing at this point.
It is. You should probably not look at the ADGR, just look at the last
Mm.
letter and the number.
Exactly.
The ADGR is the same, it's just too many letters.
Yeah. No, I agree. I agree. I asked this from all of our guests, and I'm gonna adapt the question to you. So the question typically goes as, what is your favorite GPCR? But I think I should ask you, what is your favorite adhesion GPCR?
Yes, you're right. My
And why?
favorite GPCRs are adhesion GPCRs, and I think the favorite one, because I have worked on it for a long time, is the lotrophilins.
Definitely.
Although the others shouldn't take it personally, I love them all. But lotrophilins was the one that I have started working on them. The major discovery of the gain domain was done on lotrophilins. Then we worked on them. They have ligands, tenurins bind to them, fillers bind to them, and we have worked on solve their complex structures. And recently, We have worked on basically we have been working on the full-length adhesion GPCR structure for since my lab started in 2013 for almost 11 years now, and we have a that project has been continuing for a long while, and we screened about 20 adhesion GPCRs, three different constructs, all the like early invertebrate constructs, and latrophilin 3 has been the most successful, best behaving construct. That's why I like latrophilin. And now we have a structure of the I don't want to say full length, but it is pretty full length, almost full length structures that is showing not just the transmembrane region, but the gain domain and the hormone binding domain and its orientation with respect to the transmembrane region. And here I should also mention our new other, I was talking about our collaborators, our Rıza Vafabakash, who's our single molecule collaborator, has also contributed so much to this recent work, where he has done single molecule studies, labeling the transmembrane region and the extracellular region, the gain domain, and looking for FRET on single molecules. And we now know that extracellular region is not flexible. And we have, so that's why I was saying the GPCR field, adhesion GPCR field, there's more to come. There is a tethered agonist mechanism. But all these years, we have, when we did our studies combining structural work with functional work, we have always seen that there is a correlation between extracellular region and downstream signaling in manners that cannot be explained only by tethered agonism. That it could be explained by direct regulation of the transmembrane signaling by the extracellular region in a tethered agonist independent mechanism. So recently we are showing that there is a communication interplay coupling, I am not sure what word to use, between the extracellular region and the transmembrane region. So latrophilin has latrophilin 3, human latrophilin 3 is the one that has given us that. That's why me latrophilin should be my favorite, but I love others too.
I love it. I love it. And you know, you, I think you know, I want to say maybe a true GPCR scientist when they talk about the receptors as they were about the receptors' behavior and allowing you. And that's what I use always, all the time. I feel like each GPCR is unique. You have to get to know the GPCR, and then you have to work with the GPCR in a way that it allows you to discover things about them. It's like this very difficult personality, where they're not difficult, but very hidden personality that they have, and you have to get to know them in order for them to let you in on the secrets.
That's right. Yes. And
I love
also,
it.
latrophilin is important for, like, it's essential for synapse formation and synaptic specificity. That's why I like neurobiology and I'm a synapse person. I am doing other things now, but I do definitely like the synapse. So, yeah, maybe my favorite might be latrophilin.
I love it. I love it. And it's going full circle and keeping into that space. Now, this is wonderful. I wanted to ask, we have this section about inspiring young scientists, and I was wondering, what are the top three aha moments that you had during your career as a scientist that changed or shaped your trajectory?
Changed or shaped? It isn't really, it's really hard question.
I know.
I guess the not the aha moments, but the discovery of the gain domain is one thing. I think the what I just told you about the full extracellular, full, like almost full length adhesion GPCR structure and its implications about what it means, is those two are really important, I believe. It's not really an aha, it's not just one moment.
Series of moments.
It's a one of them is 5 years, took me 5 years, the other one took me 10 years. So it's not really an aha moment, but I think that so I'm kind of thinking about adhesion GPCRs from also a how can we drug them point of view. And I'm not really a pharmacologist, but I know that in the in the GPCR, how to drug GPCRs, specificity is important, and targeting the transmembrane region, only transmembrane region, is difficult to it's hard to make specific ligands. So I do think that targeting the extracellular region is an opportunity for adhesion GPCRs. And if we look at other receptor fields, other cell surface proteins like receptor tyrosine kinases, EGF receptors, or integrins or other things, their extracellular regions are full of adhesion domains. So basically, adhesion GPCRs are not just GPCRs. They are GPCRs, and they are these adhesion, large adhesion molecules that they are a chimera, and they are drug targeting can be done by targeting the transmembrane region, but also very similar to other non-GPCR receptor fields by targeting the extracellular regions. But the direct communication of the extracellular region with the transmembrane region without shedding is important, because then you can target the extracellular regions, which are variables, which are very then you can be really specific about targeting GPCRs. So I really think that this is very important. So that is one aha moment that took 10 years, more than 10 years.
It can be
Another
any moment in time, but
one, and yeah, the other one can be the gain domain, which I kind of told you. And the first one, the aha moment, I have had one aha moment, which was, and when I was an undergrad, I was in doing genetics then. That's kind of a little funny, not that funny, but that was my first finding. I was doing a linkage analysis, and I was doing PCR and looking at the PCR results in a dark room from a photo machine, like taking the picture. It was taking a photo, and it was coming out of the camera, and I was looking at it in the dark in a little light. And because it was all high up, I had to be on a stool which was shaking. So I'm in the dark. So that's my I when I when you ask an aha moment, that is the moment that I almost fell down, because when I saw the PCR bands linkage analysis, anyway, it's a long story, but you need to see two PCR products separate the gel on the DNA gel. And when they do not separate, that means that they are
There's
linked.
the linkage.
Gene that I was looking for was linked to this place on the chromosome. So that was my aha moment.
A dangerous one.
I almost fell.
A dangerous aha moment.
Yes, that's the true aha moment.
Wow.
It was when I almost fell, and I didn't in the dark. So
Wow.
it
I
would be
love
aha.
it. Thank you for sharing that. I
Sure.
think this is really cool. Do you have any advice for a science junior scientists who want to work either in the GPCR field in general, but more specifically in the adhesion GPCR field?
I'm not sure. Work hard. Don't.
I think what comes through our conversation from your perspective is really don't be afraid to work on things that are brand new, and
Yes.
don't be afraid of the unknown, because the way you were explaining to us, when you started out and there were no tools, there's nothing, a lot of people might have thought, oh my God, why is she doing this? You
I
know?
guess I did it because I found it more challenging and fun, and just that's who I am, I guess.
But I think that sorry. Oh, there's this delay, so I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, basically, It's more fun for me, and it is more challenging. The more challenging it is, the more interesting to me. And I guess it's important also, biologically important, that drives me. So I kind of my suggestion to young scientists is that they should go after their passions, whatever they are passionate about, they should do it. Maybe the wrong advice, but
No, I mean it's I think it's when I think about work, it has to be something that excites you, something that you're passionate about, something that you really find interesting, because I feel like life is too short to do something that you don't like.
exactly. That's what I was thinking. That life is too short to spend by things that you don't actually want to do, but you do just because it is, I don't
Because
know,
yeah,
it will
it's
bring
trendy
you
for
a success
exactly.
in other people's eyes.
Exactly. No, I agree. All right, two last questions. A hard one coming up again. If you
Okay.
could go back in time and give yourself advice, what would be the advice and when would that time be?
Oh, this was not in the questions you sent
I
me.
know, I just came up with it because
It was
you took us back and forth. I mean, it's not an easy one, but it could be. The way I think about advice to myself is there something I could have paid more attention to, or is it something that I should have done differently, or I should have not done at all? But then
I
again,
don't have anything like that. I would still do everything I did.
which is a great answer, because it, and that also comes through the conversation. It sounds like from the age of 13, you knew that it was science. And you did everything that needed to be done in order to satisfy that need of not for knowledge, need for challenge, and to find answers to scientific questions. And I think it's wonderful.
Yes, I think I do feel really happy right now. It's this is the first time I'm doing a podcast and talking about myself and my, I don't know, all these questions. And well, it's really that I did that. I'm glad that I did. I don't think I would change anything. Yeah.
I love it. All right, last very easy question. When you have job openings in your team, where can people find you?
They can email me, and they can email me anytime. I don't, when I have job openings, I don't know what I do. I post on Twitter sometimes, and yes, I always wait for the good, really passionate people who will work hard, who will enjoy working hard to apply to me. They can always email me.
I love it. Damn it. And I just want to give some advertisement to your talk that you're going to give at the next Dr. GPCR Symposium on June 7th. I can't wait to hear your talk. Full disclosure, we're in March and June is far out. But you're our first speaker, confirmed speaker. And we're going to be working hard on the Dr. GPCR side to fill out the entire panel. With this, I want to say thank you for being here. I really appreciated our conversation.
Thank you so much. I also very much appreciate that you invited me, and I had a lot of fun.
Thank you so much. Don't go anywhere. I'm going to stop recording. We're going to let people wonder what we're talking about after we stop recording. Can I ask you a favor? Please subscribe to our YouTube channel. Many of you come back to watch our videos but aren't subscribed. Having more subscribers will help us get you more content. Also, mark your calendars and join me and your GPCR colleagues for the inaugural Endocrine Metabolic GPCRs conference taking place in the UK on April 22nd and 23rd. You'll be able to find more details about the event on the Dr. GPCR ecosystem under the events page. Thank you for joining us and listening to this Dr. GPCR podcast episode. We would like to thank our guests, our Dr. GPCR team, Attila, Ines, Montserrat, Ivana, Andreina, and Balint. If you like our podcast, leave us a five-star review on Apple Podcasts. You can also leave us a testimonial at drgpcr.com and subscribe today to our monthly newsletter. If you're part of the ecosystem, which we encourage you to do, it's free to join us. You'll be getting a weekly email about GPCR news. If you want to know what are the latest papers that were published, what are the latest accomplishments of your colleagues, what are the industry news in the GPCR field, and what are the job opportunities in the GPCR field, please do join us in the ecosystem. Another great way to support us is to share your favorite program with your network and colleagues. With any questions or suggestions, please email us at hello@drgpcr.com. Until next time, stay safe.